Our churches are full of lonely people, people with special needs, people who feel marginalized, newcomers who feel out of place, and I'm speaking broadly, not just our church, but I think I can say this with some confidence that probably even among us we have people who feel like they don't quite fit. We have discouraged people. We have people who need to be important to someone. We have people who need to feel they are loved. People like you and me. If that is true, then I'll carry on with the rest of the sermon. I'm assuming it to be true. Hospitality is one of those universal needs. We need each other in our biological families. We need each other in our church family. We need each other in the larger human family. When we think of nurturing relationships in the church family, the practice of hospitality is at heart. And so, during these 4 weeks, we want to think together about the practice of hospitality in light of the realities among us, materialism, individualistic cultures that really pull us apart. By the way, how many of you are, no, don't raise your hands, but have invited or are going to invite somebody over for lunch today? And on the other hand, how many of you are going to receive an invitation? Only half of the households in this congregation should have to prepare lunch, because the other half should be invited, right? Well, that's my pitch on practicing hospitality. Michelle Hirschberger writes a book, and she says, often hospitality to the stranger has turned into hostility instead of hospitality. Henry Nouwen says, our society seems to be increasingly full of fearful, defensive, aggressive people anxiously clinging to their property and inclined to look at their surrounding world with suspicion, always expecting an enemy to suddenly appear, intrude, and do harm. And so we lock our doors at night, and maybe we even lock our doors on the church parking lot. By the way, why do people in August lock their doors in the church parking lot? It's to keep the neighbors from putting their extra zucchini in the back seat. But I do want to read just a few things from this book, a pamphlet entitled Surviving in Today's World. And it calls itself a practical guide for staying alive in urban America. The pamphlet insists that suspicion has to become second nature to us, always assuming that other persons are either enemies or predators. In a society where individuals are the basic units, related competitively in the pursuit of limited possessions, it is to be expected that one will need to protect oneself and one's possessions with such devices as window bars, bulletproof doors, peepholes, alarms, even concealed weapons. On the news, when the two escaped convicts in the eastern states were at large, there was one lady, and these convicts were believed to be in her area, and she said, I have my 30-06 on my kitchen table loaded, and it's going to stay loaded until those two guys are found. And I thought, what a way to live. Yeah, they had a bad record, those two. We would have been uneasy, but what a way to live. And then this pamphlet says one should train one's child to make caution and suspicion second nature. And then I think, yes, but no. 1 Peter 4, verse 9, the verse that Jill quoted, be hospitable to one another without complaining. And so the question, what is biblical hospitality, and what does it mean to take up God's call to be hospitable in our present age? And so we have another verse in Hebrews 13:2 that says, keep on loving each other as brothers. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have entertained angels without knowing it. And that is a reference to Genesis 18, verses 1 to 8. We'll have that on the screen, I think. Genesis 18, 1 to 8, I want to read that story. The Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. He said, if I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat so that you can be refreshed and then go on your way now that you have come to your servant. Very well, they answered, do as you say. So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. Quick, he said, get three seahs of the finest flour and knead it and bake some bread. Then he ran to the herd and selected a choice, tender calf and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. He then brought some curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared and set these before them. While they ate, he stood near them under a tree. Interesting hospitality there. All kinds of aspects to ancient Near East hospitality. The story gives us an elaborate description of hospitality. The account of Abraham hosting three angelic visitors lays a foundation for hospitality in Jewish and Christian traditions. In the ancient Near Eastern culture, hospitality was not optional. It was important. More than just custom or simple good manners, it was a sacred duty that everyone was expected to observe. In nomadic life, where there were few public places to obtain lodging and food, the practice of hospitality was necessary for survival. The wandering traveler was at the mercy of the host. On the other hand, the host had little chance to hear news from the outside world except for the stories brought by the guest. The host was obligated to provide food, shelter, and protection in return for the guest's stories from the outside world. And so in this Abraham story, we see him scurrying around almost frantically, bringing water for the foot washing, then getting the bread machine loaded and plugged in, and then standing by quietly while the guests eat. The story didn't take us very long to read, but everything, the preparation for all of it, must have taken quite some time. I mean, how fast can you kill a calf? How fast can you make bread without the bread machine? It reminds me, though, of the story that Cesar Garcia of Mennonite World Conference told at EMC convention last July about being hosted in Africa. He says after he preached in the outdoor setting of the church, he was informed there would be a meal, and he envisioned a church potluck. When a plate of food was delivered to him, he found himself being the only one sitting down at a long table. When he hesitated, waiting for the other congregational attendees to also sit down, he was told to just eat. About 60 people stood aside watching him eat of the limited food they so desperately needed. And he says that was the hardest meal he ever ate. And we can put ourselves in that place. But that was hospitality. Back to Abraham. Twice he refers to himself as your servant. As a servant, it was his duty to provide for the needs of these visitors. They, in turn, brought the good news of a promised son. If you go into the next chapter, Genesis chapter 19, there's another interesting story. Two angels appear to Lot in the evening, and he invites them in. They seem to prefer to stay in the town square, but Lot insists, prepares a meal and a bed and protection, and then there's the story of that mob of men outside wanting to break down the door, the abuse that was in their plans. Of main concern in this story is the Sodomites' violation of the custom of hospitality. When strangers, even enemies, find refuge in your house, your duty is provision and protection. And the mob in that story almost profaned that sacred law. Fortunately, in that story, the angels had connections. They struck the mob with blindness and managed to remove Lot and his family to safety outside this hostile setting. But it gives us a little bit of a picture of a hospitality in that culture. There was no option. Protection, provision, shelter was expected. Another Old Testament story from 1 Kings chapter 17, and I won't read the text there, starting at verse 8 if you have your Bibles. When Elijah's water supply had dried up, and this 1 Kings 17 is the story of Elijah, when the water supply had dried up, he hears God calling him to go to the house of a widow in Zarephath to find sustenance. The land was ravaged by famine. Starvation seemed imminent. The widow had enough for one more meal, and then she and her son would lie down and die. And then this stranger, an Israelite, a stranger, shows up in her doorway. He too was on the point of starvation. In fact, in a sense, he had caused it. He was the one who had prayed, God withhold rain. He had had that encounter with, or was going to have that encounter with the prophets of Baal. But in this point, in a way, it was his prayers that had caused the drought. Over here in the land of Sidon, he was in enemy territory. This was Jezebel's realm. And Jezebel was after his life. Yet here he is asking for hospitality, not only for a drink of water, but also for bread, and in a way for protection. So why in her desperate situation did she say to Elijah, did she say yes to Elijah? Being needy and vulnerable, I guess she thought she had little to lose. And in that situation, she experienced God's provision in new ways. The oil did not run out. There was flour. And so, even in that situation, being in enemy territory, hospitality was extended, even when it didn't make sense. Maybe when we think of a story like that, then we should think twice about saying, we can't invite anybody over today because, everything I baked is in the freezer. It's going to be hard, going to take a while to thaw it out. And so, not today. We can take a look at this story and say, that kind of hospitality is still valued in many parts of the world. Especially, it seems, in areas where a lack of resources make the practice necessary. And so, another little story from the book here. While living in Turkey, Christy Risser once found herself in the middle of a moderate earthquake. We were astonished. Here were people who had escaped their crumbling homes with only the clothing on their backs inviting us into their new home, which was a blanket spread out on the ground in the park. Despite this situation, depressing as it was, the irrepressible Turkish hospitality came shining through. Had we not insisted on leaving to visit others in the town, we would have burst from all the tea they offered to us. And then later, she writes, I was approached by five Turkish women dressed in the typical peasant dress. They came to apologize. They wanted very much to invite us all to their home for food and chai, but their home had been leveled in the earthquake and they did not even have a teapot to make tea for us. They apologized over and over for this apparent lack of hospitality. These people had literally lost everything, and they were more concerned about our comfort and safety than their own situation. And again, quoting Henry Nouwen, he says, "Poverty makes a good host. Those who have little materially have nothing to lose. Their own life situations have freed them from the illusion that one can have everything under control. Their only hope is that God will provide. And if that is true, then why not share?" How needy and vulnerable are we willing to become in order to experience God's marvelous care and provision? Now I have a choice to make, a story to read to you or one other scripture. I'm going to read the story. It's called Two Bags of Groceries. Strangers can be a bother. Vonda was one of those strangers. She brought her kids to my daycare. She was different. Her face was always pocked and marked kind of funny, like she had really scratched herself. She smoked one cigarette after another. Her kids were a pain, and worse, she was really slow paying the bills. I didn't want my kids playing with hers because they were so crude. She always seemed to have a chip on her shoulder. But that was only the beginning. She left me, left the daycare, sticking me with an unpaid bill of $500. For a struggling new daycare owner, it hurt me badly. I had a small profit margin, and I needed every cent just to make payroll. I shook my head. I should have known. About 6 weeks later, one day in prayer, God said to me, "Go buy Vonda some groceries." "What?" I said. Now, I didn't actually hear the voice of God saying this to me, yet I heard this in the deepest part of my being. Just as deeply, I resisted. She owed me money, after all. And what about her dignity if she found out? I knew she was struggling, but that was her business. Bottom line, I knew she needed a lot of help, and I didn't have it to give. I wasn't down to my last meal like the widow, but I was down to my last shred of sanity. I couldn't do it. For 2 weeks, God said, "Just two bags of groceries, Michelle. Just two bags of groceries." And for 2 weeks, I hesitated. Finally, I caved in. I sent my husband to buy about $50 worth of groceries on a Thursday night. The next morning, we waited until we were sure she had gone to work, and then he delivered them, and that was it. No fanfare, no angel coming down to say, "Oh, what a noble person you are." The act was so uneventful that my husband barely remembers doing it. We did it just to get it done. I needed more prodding to be poor in spirit to Vonda. I forgot about her, except to bemoan my lost money occasionally. But then 6 months later, God spoke to me again. This time, too, the message was clear. Go visit Vonda. I was so full of myself that I thought this was foolishness. There were 1,000 reasons not to go, chief of which was that she had moved to another town 20 miles away and I didn't know her exact address. No way was I going to leave my husband and kids on a beautiful Sunday afternoon for some feeling I had. 2 hours later, I was in my car. "This is so stupid," I said as I drove down the road. When I got to her town, I stopped at a phone booth. Surely her address or at least her phone number would be there, but it wasn't. Now I really felt stupid. A voice inside me said, "Drive down the streets." Well, I had come this far, so I drove on. But with every turn of the steering wheel, I was saying, "Stupid, stupid, this is stupid." I was afraid. I wasn't afraid of Vonda or any other stranger who might be on the streets that afternoon. I wasn't worried about being in the car alone. I was afraid of failure. I feared that even though I thought I had heard God's voice, I really hadn't. Afraid that I would drive down the streets and nothing would happen, no one would be there. Afraid of being a fool. It has happened before and it will happen again, being a foolish host. I want so badly to hear God's voice in my ministry, but what if it's in my head? What if I can't hear God at all? What if God isn't speaking to me? Anyway, I drove down those streets, feeling so silly, looking for Vonda. Suddenly, on the third street I took, I saw her children. I was excited to see them, and they seemed overjoyed. They led me to their home and ran up the steps to get their mom. There, for the first time, Vonda and I gave each other a hug. Something happened in that moment. We met as friends, not daycare worker and client, not superior and inferior, or worse, landlord and debtor. We were equals. Vonda took me into her home, which was clean but bare. There was no heat in the house, and spring evenings in Missouri are chilly. The children asked for food. I could have seen all this before, but I didn't. I didn't want to. We sat down, and for the first time, she began to tell me her story. For the first time, I was ready to listen. She told me about times of incredible abuse and hardship that I found hard to believe. Yet I knew them to be true. The scratches on her face came from times when her husband scraped her face against the concrete walls of the garage when he was angry with her. I cried and cried, but Vonda didn't cry until she began to tell me about the time she was going to commit suicide. Her face softened in remembrance, and through her tears, she told me a story that would change my life forever. It was a Friday, and she was facing another weekend without food. She had spent so many weekends like that, too many weekends with hungry children, and she knew she couldn't do it again. She just couldn't. She borrowed a gun from a friend. The plan was to shoot the children that night and then kill herself. On the way home, she prayed to God for the first time. God, she said, if you're up there, I need to know really soon because I'm going to shoot the kids and kill myself. If I ever needed a miracle, it's now. When she drove into her driveway, she saw two bags of groceries. Dogs were circling around them, but for some strange reason, they didn't go near the food. Hungry as the children were, she put the food in the house and drove to the nearest church she could find. Vonda talked to a pastor and began a relationship with God that day. Two bags of groceries. An angel sent them, she said. I never told her otherwise. I think that's where we say hospitality is also evangelism. Somewhere in the next few sermons, you will probably focus or get led to Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42, so I will not focus on that today, but that's the story of Jesus and Mary and Martha, another good story teaching us about hospitality. In conclusion, if you check with Mr. or Mrs. Google on their thoughts about hospitality, you will find that they talk about the hospitality industry. Quickly, we are led to focus on a catering to the wealthy, on classy restaurants, on cruise ships, on luxurious lodging, on events planning. That's the hospitality industry. It depends on people's leisure time and disposable income. All of our biblical stories have nothing to do with leisure time and disposable income. It's such a stark contrast to the way we, as Jesus followers, must think about the practice, the welcoming, accepting, rubbing shoulders with those who need our welcoming, accepting shoulders in the way that Jesus welcomed tax collectors and sinners, inviting them and us to his banquet. A few years ago, when Nike was advertising, their slogan was, "Just do it." That's my challenge to practicing hospitality. Just do it. One other thing that we were challenged with at convention was the sponsorship of refugees out of Syria. Right now, our EMC churches, together with or through MCC or other agencies, will be invited to extend hospitality by sponsoring refugees coming out of Syria by the thousands. And so we have opportunities not only right next door, but in the larger world to practice hospitality that way. May we learn to meet Jesus in the people with whom we exchange hospitality. That is our challenge. And so may our prayer be, Lord, send me an opportunity to host and bless someone today. Amen.